This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw. For Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
All right. Hello, YouTube. The party started 36 minutes ago. Big discussions on Jake Paul and Gervonta Davis. The fight no one wanted, no one's getting. Tanahashi's final homecoming, lots of news coming out of that particular story, and the emerging star that is Udo Ice. What a weekend for him. What a weekend he has coming up in Anjo.
You will all know the name Udo Ice. Ice versus Ace coming up.
Ice versus Ace. We had a big discussion on the Tanahashi final homecoming event and a really big big scandal in the UFC with this this fight that went down over the weekend at the Apex card in Las Vegas. I don't even think hardened UFC fans knew the name Isaac Dalgarian before Saturday, but they sure as hell know him and Yadier Delval after Saturday night as well, where Dalgarian was a fairly big favorite in this fight, and then some suspicious money started to come in, swaying the line. And I forgot to ask you this when we were having our discussion, Way, but it was also noted the fact that, like, the UFC was made aware of this line switch. Like, if you're in the UFC's position, are you just pulling this fight if you have this information? Like, is this worth putting this fight into the octagon if you're getting this information? Like, obviously they went ahead with the fight, but look at the fallout of this.
But is there precedent set for that? Like a fight being canceled because of suspicious betting activity?
Not in MMA. There was a Eddie Hearn boxing fight not all that long ago that he did pull for that very reason. But in the UFC...
Well, there's certainly justification now. And I think without knowing how the fight would have gone and seeing this really piss-poor attempt at like trying to make a rear naked choke look real, or at least watch the fight for yourselves and make a determination. But I think they probably didn't have enough evidence to justify just pulling it.
We can always it makes me feel good about like what is newsworthy when I find out that Way sought out this fight and sat down to watch an MMA fight. So this is what it takes for Way to sit down and watch MMA in 2025.
Pass the litmus test. I love scandal. I love tea. Yes.
So all of that can be found on the XL version of Rewind to Raw, which all Post Wrestling Cafe members receive. And we have just put out our menu for the month of November. So a lot coming up in the coming weeks. Beginning this week with the first of two Rewind Aways in November, we're putting together a compilation of some of the best retirement matches of all time. So on Thursday, Way and I are going to be reviewing Terry Funk's retirement. It doesn't feel like it was 42 years ago that that Terry Funk retired, but he did in fact retire back in 1983 in All Japan. And what an iconic figure that he was still being referred to decades later after that retirement.
Yeah, let's just qualify the fact that like we're talking about retirement matches in billing. These aren't necessarily the final matches of these men's careers that we'll be talking about, but
yes.
It's a wrestling retirement, so what do you really want, right? We'll also be talking about, of course, The Undertaker's retirement, Shawn Michaels' retirement, like the more well-remembered versions of those. Sting's retirement, which has stuck thus far.
Sting's retirement has stuck, and Tom Nakano's from earlier this year as well, which is also stuck. So no selection of Kurt Hennig and Buff Bagwell from WCW Mayhem, my favorite of all time, where Kurt Hennig came out of the retirement the next night on Nitro.
We could do the worst retirement matches too at some point.
Oh, there's a long list of them. Yeah. I mean, maybe Shawn Michaels' actual retirement match would probably be on that list.
Ric Flair's actual retirement match will also be on that list too.
Very possible. So that's coming up on Thursday on the Post Wrestling Cafe. Also coming up this month, we are going
I said Undertaker's retirement match. I meant Ric Flair's.
Yes, Ric Flair and Shawn from 2008 will be on the docket this coming Thursday. Also this month, we are going to do a Rewind Away on Transformers the movie from 1986.
Yeah. I mean, we are the age for it. I think we're the right age for it, you know, to be Transformers people.
But yeah, but you and I didn't watch anything. Like, I know nothing about Transformers.
Neither you or I are Transformers people, and that might disappoint a lot of people.
Oh, this might be terrible.
But I'm very curious to dive into not the Michael Bay Transformers, but just like the sort of nostalgia and the hysteria around the original cartoon Transformers through our review of this 1986 movie. So we might need an expert to join us for this one.
If there is such a thing, we are welcome to.
There are.
But one thing I am an expert in, that is Beverly Hills 90210. And after a bit of a rewatch, Brandon from New Jersey and I have decided, you know what, we've got to talk about this season together. So we are going to do a chat together about season four. This being the season where everyone goes to university and there are some immaculate storylines. So we will bring everyone up to speed on what happened in season four and then review the special 2-hour season finale featuring Brandon Walsh going to Washington on behalf of the task force to meet President Bill Clinton.
Wow.
In Bill Clinton's 90210 debut. And David and Donna.
Excuse me?
Bill Clinton's debut on 90210.
Are you sure? Are you talking about the guy, the same guy who appeared on at a WWE? One of those?
No, 90210 got the real deal.
They got the real Bill Clinton.
They got him.
You're joking.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So tune in for that chat later on this month, and of course we will have reviews of UFC 322, TNA Turning Point, the Tanahashi Final Homecoming review is already up on the cafe, and then Neil and I will also get together for a review of This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg, the inside story of AEW.
Don't forget Post Pro Res with Karen and WH Park. That'll be coming out actually tomorrow. So by the morning when most of you guys are probably checking this out in your cafe feeds, you will find the latest edition of Post Pro Res and WH and Karen's thoughts on everything being set up for Wrestle Kingdom right now.
So you can support us, postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you all the extra shows, or you can jump up to a double double or espresso. On to tonight's edition of Raw, which they noted many times was sold out and the first Raw ever in New Mexico, which is kind of hard to imagine, but they were at the Rio Rancho Event Center with WrestleTix reporting 6,462 tickets distributed. This is not a building size that they typically run. This thing has like a 7,000 seat setup, and I'm pretty sure it would have been sold out. They said it about 100 times on this show. But yes, the first Raw to take place in the state of New Mexico, which is I am almost positive they've done SmackDown in Albuquerque, but I guess they've never done a Raw in New Mexico before.
I guess it doesn't sound that shocking to me. Like, it's not necessarily
this company. It kind of is shocking sometimes that they would run a building like. It's not often they're doing 6,500 people for or under 7,000 for an episode of Raw. Like, they are like, that's definitely on the low end. And this was not necessarily of demand. It was just the building size.
Well, maybe this will be a new hotbed for, you know, like the next new frontier for professional wrestling.
You know. Maybe they've realized that we should go to some of these smaller markets. We need to bring the WWE to these cities. Maybe we'll lower prices too. We don't want to exclude all these places of all these parts of the country that are just not getting a part of the WWE experience.
It's antiquated.
Yeah, sounds like something Mark Shapiro would say. Mm.
Our new champion, CM Punk, walks into the building and he gets into the ring and he has some thank yous to give out to AJ Lee, to the fans. I would have gotten here without you. And to Jey Uso for the tough match he gave him. Hopes that they can be friends. But as I said when I came back, I didn't come here to make friends. He needs to hold on to this belt as tightly as he can. But this time there's no Seth Rollins hiding with a briefcase. And then takes the belt and swings it over his head as a final F you to Seth Rollins and tells him, if you come at me again, I'll put you back on your couch.
It could both be interpreted as an F you, but I also took it as like an actual like get well soon type of, you know, like shout out.
Get well soon. He threatened to re-injure him if he gets in his business again.
He did it with a smile, almost as if like, you know, teasing, you know?
Okay. Well, it's quite a love letter from CM Punk. He's got the crown and now he's got a target. And he says, if he's not at his best, I can lose this belt. He knows the Vision are coming for him. And there's people he wants to face and people he wants to punch in the face. He wants to test himself against the best, like AJ Styles. He wants to punch Dominic Mysterio in the face and then mentions other possible challengers like JD McDonagh, Finn Balor, Sheamus, and John Cena if you want to be an 18-time champion before retiring. So I don't know if we'll get a New Japan road for John Cena to create to get one last Punk Cena match in there.
I don't think they would mention it if they didn't intend on doing it.
I mean, they're doing like a big, big Raw at Madison Square Garden in 2 weeks. I mean,
yeah.
You can do anything you want if Cena is able to wrestle. Because I did find that to be a curious name, and it was certainly in the Vince McMahon era, it was always a rule of you don't promise something that you have no plan on delivering.
And I think
that was just certainly the name that stood out the most, but maybe we'll get Punk against JD McDonagh in 2 weeks.
I feel like it's a universal rule, no matter like, you know, what era in pro wrestling, you don't really give people this sort of heavily anticipated a mention or a tease of a heavily anticipated matchup without actually planning on delivering it. And I can imagine.
Well, the Rock would suggest, you know what, we can test.
He
we
is
can
35 steps ahead. Okay, John, you're just like, just come on, just shut your mouth. All right. I mean, a lot of people were probably left dissatisfied with much of the John Cena run, including this match with CM Punk where he played a heel. So to actually do like a proper farewell with the both of them being baby faces, even on a TV for MSG, that seems very appropriate to me, actually.
And you could certainly get, you know, for 1 week, you could definitely build up like the idea of him getting one more title reign and defending the title in his retirement match. Like you could certainly get people hooked on this match and do it in a way that is compelling. So I wouldn't rule this out.
I think you could do it on finish, and I think people won't be so upset by it.
Logan Paul interrupts, and Punk wants nothing to do with this guy, suggests he goes and takes up Ilya Dragunov's open challenge. Paul says, I am a Ferrari. You are a used Honda Civic. And notes how
he mentions how like I am a Ferrari, which most of you can't afford. I would argue at today's resale value and just the market, I don't know if most people could afford a used Honda Civic either right now.
So. Well, that's Logan Paul is out of step with the common New Mexico resident. He deserves the next title shot because he beat AJ Styles at WrestleMania. That prompts the Vision to come out. Paul calls Logan Paul a bitch without an owner. Reed is now the OTT, not over the top, but an original tribal thief. And Braun is at the front of the line. Punk, you've had that belt for 2 days, which is 432 shy of our reign, but it wasn't me that lost our title all those years ago. Logan Paul has a defense which is pretty ironclad in today's modern professional wrestling, where I deserve this title match because I got to the ring quicker than you guys. So Breaker explains they've been patient for weeks, but now we waited until a champion was crowned, and the dog isn't waiting any longer, and he'll whip both of them like a dog. As Punk says it's time to fight, and he tells Logan to either fight with him or get the hell out of here. So Logan thinks about it and he goes to leave, and Breaker shoves Logan to the ground. Breaker and Reed go after Punk, and then Paul, after hesitating, returns to the ring to attack the Vision and gets beaten down and hit with a tsunami until Punk chases them off with a chair in an angle that would play itself out by the end of the night and left me somewhat scratching my head by the end of it all.
By the end of the night or by the end of this particular portion?
Kind of by the end of the night.
Okay. I guess we'll talk about maybe why. Well, did you have any, what were your thoughts on this segment by itself?
So I didn't really know what the purpose of this was other than to, I guess,
to throw your scent off of the eventual reveal at the end of the show.
So was this a coordinated plan with the Vision, or was this Logan coming to his senses by the end? How did you read the closing angle?
I think it was Logan coming to his senses.
Okay. Well, then yeah. That makes more sense than this. Like, first of all, he survives this tsunami and comes out. He's fine by the end of the night.
Logan Paul. It was only one tsunami.
Oh, it was only one. It was multiple tsunamis. Okay. Well, we were told he went to a hospital, local medical facility. I mean, it gets him in the last thing in the world, like a people CM Punk should have any affiliation with is Logan Paul. So I don't think that part worked at all. It kind of made Punk look a little ridiculous by the end of the night. But by the end of this all, I think we're starting to see War Games take shape and Logan Paul obviously having a role with the Vision.
Yeah, I actually quite enjoyed the segment. I mean, I think like it would certainly be unfathomable that they would tease that they would have Logan Paul turn babyface, but they were at least like teasing it and they were suggesting it. And I thought like they were doing a pretty good job of it. You know, like this audience was not biting because Logan was doing the whole thing where like he's trying to like think whether or not he should be helping Punk. And none of this audience was clamoring for him to help CM Punk really. Cause like they really don't like Logan Paul. Right. But they did it anyway. And I thought like it was well done enough that you could buy that the character of CM Punk would be convinced that, you know, Logan Paul might actually be a decent guy. But so all of this to set up the swerve that we would eventually get at the end, I thought it was actually quite well done.
I could have done without the tsunami.
Yeah.
Okay. What if they had shoved him? And he comes down.
Which they did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You could have just done the... I think people would have reacted the same way to the turn. It's like, okay, you think he's standing with Punk and he turns on him. I think that would have got just as much heat and it would have been less of a gap of these two guys that just murdered you in the ring and now you're side by side with these guys.
Mm. Yeah, you might be right.
But they had him in the right role. Like, as long as Logan Paul was in a heel role by the end, I mean, all's well that ends well. Do you like Logan Paul in this spot? I almost said Logan Roy. He would have been the backup here.
Logan Roy in the Vision, I think, would be fucking amazing. But then who would succeed him? That'd be the big question.
Yeah. Well, not serious people. Mm-hmm. This segment, this is like the first 26 minutes of the show. So,
well, plus entrances with like Jay and Punk and everything, right? I let's save it for the end, you know, when we actually talk about the last segment. The holidays are fast approaching. But why not get your shopping done early and actually enjoy it? Uncommon Goods makes your holiday shopping easy and fun with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I found this super cool Starry Night Air Fort. It's basically a blow-up fort covered in glow-in-the-dark stars. You just hook it up to a box fan, and in less than a minute, you have this awesome little space for the kids to play, or even for grown-ups to sneak in and have fun. It's lightweight, easy to pack away, and really great for relaxing or imaginative play at home. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small businesses and artists, and with every purchase, they even give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So shop early, have fun, and cross those names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
November on the Post Wrestling Cafe will include Rewind Away, looking at some of the biggest retirement matches in pro wrestling history, with selections from All Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and Stardom, among others. Plus, we'll have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322 from Madison Square Garden, and the Tanahashi Final Homecoming. John and Way will be taking all of your questions on this month's installment of Ask Away, and John gets together with Brandon from New Jersey for a Season 4 retrospective of 90210. All that and so much more. Join now at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door. Stephanie Vaquer and Nikki Bella against Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez. So, of course, Vaquer teases the devil's kiss. And as every Stephanie Vaquer match is structured now, you wait and wait and wait until she can hit the devil's kiss. That's the big move that everyone is here to see. Nikki gets run into the post after a distraction, so they beat down on her. Vaquer gets in, hits her big dragon screw on Raquel, but can't lift her for the SVP, and then hits Perez with the devil's kiss. Crowd goes wild. In comes Nikki with the rack attack 2.0. Raquel breaks up the cover, and Vaquer executes a head scissors and goes for a devil's kiss on the apron, but gets smashed by Raquel face first. And then Raquel nails Nikki from the floor into a Pop Rocks. And for the second week in a row, Roxanne Perez pins Nikki Bella in 12 minutes and 47 seconds. And Nikki Bella is starting to have a, I don't know if I have it anymore.
Self-confidence issues. Yeah. I thought the match was good. I thought Raquel and Roxanne looked great here as a team. I certainly feel confident in saying that they are a stronger team than Raquel and Liv were. And I think a lot of that might also be due to like Raquel's improved confidence in the role as well. I continue to think Nikki is able to carry her weight, you know, around this division at this time. Like, she, to me, isn't just here to do a celebrity cameo short stay. She's clearly, you know, here for pretty consistently throughout the year, at least, you know, more consistent than a celebrity would. And she's clearly putting in the work to keep up with the modern standard with wrestlers that are like, I mean, somebody like Roxanne Perez is almost like two generations, you know, beyond when Nikki started in like 2008. So I think she still matches up really well here and is certainly a very good character to, you know, pair Stephanie Vaquer with in order to really push the story with Vaquer and Nikki.
So somehow, as a result of this outcome, where Roxanne pinned Vaquer, Raquel gets a title match next week.
That makes no sense. Yeah.
And Nikki feels guilty about this.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't make sense. The matchmaking does not make sense.
Why isn't Roxanne getting this title match?
Well, she pinned Nikki. I don't know. It's a win on the record book.
So the champion wasn't pinned in this match. Raquel didn't pin anyone in this match, but that's the match we have coming out of this. So Raquel got this title match easier than Yota Tsuji did.
Have you read the matchmaking rule book in the WWE universe?
Not the updated version.
No.
Okay. I need to get my hands on that.
So we don't know.
Later tonight, they're going to announce the first two matches in the Last Time Is Now tournament. Boy, does that have a ring to it. We're going to get Last Time Is Now tournament merchandise with brackets on it.
Yes. You'll get toilet paper with the brackets on it. You'll get, I don't know, pencils and erasers and everything.
Man, the merchandise team, you know, they've been waiting all year for this next month. Like, this is what we've been counting down for. Like, how much have they produced, mass produced, with John Cena's likeness all over it? For Boston, for New York, for the retirement. Punk runs into Jey Uso backstage, and Jey explains, I've been all over the place. I appreciate our fight. Man, they're coming for you, Punk, and I want to help you. And Punk says, okay, cool. I'm going to put my gear on. And just like that, we've got a main event for tonight. Punk and Jey against The Vision.
Yeah. Jay's characterization has been somewhat interesting, you know, especially tonight, because, I mean, the character mentions it. He acknowledges that he's been all over the place. And when you really think about the past 2 months, he really has been all over the place, hasn't he?
I've been a babyface. I've been a heel. I've been a tweener.
Gone from being like the little Roman thing to like having this like big rivalry with his brother who just like is not even on this show. To now, like, on this episode, being like a pretty pure baby face, and the crowd responded to him as that. So I don't know if like these sort of like mood swings are intentional, but I certainly think they're like playing as if that is the character now, somebody who doesn't really know who he is and just goes from like one direction to the next from week to week.
It's a great crutch for inconsistencies among a character too.
Well, we meant to.
Oh, that's his character. He has mood swings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Penta and El Grande Americano. Man, I don't know if it was as loud until, like, they went to a commercial break, and I was live at this point, and it wasn't zapping through the commercials. the crowd got so heated for Penta. Like, they were so loud for this guy as he was selling and then makes his comeback. They come back. Bravo and Rayo are in the corner. Both end up getting ejected, but Rayo hands over the metal plate into the mask of El Grande. Penta ducks a headbutt, hits the backstabber, and then Grande goes for a leaping headbutt and gets super kicked with the metal plate inside and falls to a Mexican destroyer off the ropes in 10 minutes, 26 seconds. Rayo and Bravo try to jump Penta, and Penta escapes, which I don't know if Rayo and Bravo are the level of guys that Penta should be escaping from.
But it was a 3-on-1, that's why.
Escape. These guys are kind of the geeks, but...
I mean, he already beat them, essentially. Like, Penta got a clean win here, basically in a 3-on-1 situation, so I feel like he already got one over on him.
Does he know, this run-in at the end means he's got to go through all of these guys again, because this has to continue.
What more does he have to do? He's already beaten...
Do this at the end? I'm sure he's going to face these guys, and maybe he'll have to get backup.
Yeah. I thought this was a good way, because, like, I expressed how on Saturday, it really felt like Penta was such a background player in that match with Rusev and Dom. So I think he needed a win like this in order to just show, like, how great he is. He's able to beat these three, essentially, on his own. But I wonder what the direction is after this, because Dom is tied up with Rey, it seems. So what is the play here? Does Penta bring other friends? Does he have other friends? His brother just, like... can't make it over to Raw for some reason.
He's busy with Tala Tonga.
Yeah. Okay.
What are the odds in a month Penta's still going to be wrestling with El Grande Americano?
Very good, I would say.
Okay, that's your answer. Okay, maybe New Day will come back.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe somebody from, like, AAA. Like, I don't know. Like, they'll bring in, like, a Mr. Iguana or something.
I'm sure Penta is just bracing for the Mr. Iguana tag run. Kabuki Warriors video. No more disrespect will be shown toward Asuka. She is the one true legend of the women's division. They will keep tearing this division apart until they are given their title match, which didn't take a whole lot of effort because they're getting it next week. They let Bayley walk away last week. She should have been thankful, but Asuka's kindness won't last forever. Mm-hmm. It sounds simple, but she has a very maniacal delivery with all of these.
It's great. It's really great. They look great. They sound great. And they both have, like, very distinguishable characters now. Like, in the past, they might do these sort of things. And, like, you wouldn't really, like, know what was really behind the words. Now you know exactly that Kairi Sane is somebody who's completely subservient and fearful of Asuka. And Asuka is just, like, is crazy right now.
During the commercial break, I imagine you missed this. Byron Saxton interviewed Rusev.
I saw it, yeah.
Oh. Rusev explains that Dominic is messing with fate itself. My destiny has not been derailed. It has just been rerouted. And then is asked about the potential of being in the John Cena tournament. And he mentions his history. And he must revisit his past before I can become my future. Avenging the greatest defeat of my life when I rode out in a tank. And he says that he has to achieve the greatest victory. Rusev will have his day. And then, as if this promo wasn't great enough, he ends it with the new hot catchphrase in all of professional wrestling. That's what I was yelling after game 5. Oh, dude, I'm not kidding. I thought this was Rusev's best promo since coming back. I think this was one of his best segments, period, since coming back to WWE. I thought this was great. And unfortunately, a fraction of the audience saw this. I thought this was, like, a guy that really cut a great promo in the dead zone of Raw.
This is often the case where, like, I mean, the stuff either on .com or, like, maybe between the commercials on Netflix is often some of the best stuff, because you get people.
I rarely am live to see these promos, so I don't know how many people are utilizing these, but I was glad I caught this because I thought Rusev was great here.
I'm sure there's just a looser, you know, freedom to experiment and to try new things. And he tried something new, and it certainly, I thought, caught. you know, this was like it was the most personality I think we've seen in Rusev in quite some time. It wasn't just him like talking in a dark room about like, I don't know, the Bible or some shit. It was just him yelling like stuff in a foreign language and sounding cool as hell. And I love like the reference to Cena. It could to this day, like it might still be looked at as the peak of Rusev's career, that WrestleMania match with John Cena. And so this tournament, again, offers a lot of opportunity for people like The Miz, people like Rusev, people like Sheamus, who have those histories with Cena, to at least tell some sort of Cena story without actually having a match with them by the end.
Dominic comes out and gets a pretty strong reaction. He calls himself the greatest intercontinental champion, the greatest mega champion, and the greatest luchador of all time. No one can stop me. And that leads to Rey Mysterio coming out with a thunderous reception. I mean, this crowd was, they were really heated for several segments on the show, and this was definitely one of them for, you know, getting to see Rey here in person. And that said, once they got through going nuts for this guy, then they start singing for Dominic, and Rey calls him out and says, "You think you're the greatest luchador? What about El Santo? What about Blue Demon? What about Eddie Guerrero?" And I thought he was going to pull out the ballot for the Observer Hall of Fame and go through everybody here. What about Dory Dixon? He says, when he mentions Eddie, Dom cuts him off. "You keep my father's name out of your mouth. And I was better than he ever was." He says, "I'm better than you. And Rey will not let Dominic disrespect Lucha Libre." Dominic says, "I made the Mysterio name relevant. I've surpassed you." And he tells him to leave, but Rey warns, "As long as I'm around, you will never be king of the luchadors or the greatest Mysterio." And as Dominic goes to throw, Rey blocks him, tilt-a-whirl, and hits a 619 to Dominic for a giant pop as he rolls out of the ring. And setting up something here with Rey and Dominic. And I could certainly see, you know, Rey should be ready to come back, you would think, pretty soon. He got injured at WrestleMania. Or missed WrestleMania. He got injured at that SmackDown right before.
Wade essentially said on commentary that like there are rumors that he's cleared. So I think that, I mean, he did physicality in this match.
I wonder if they could fast track a match with these two that gets them to Dominic and Cena at Survivor Series.
I think this is Survivor Series. I mean, in San Diego,
Dominic, it would mean though they have to have something bigger for Cena than what was originally planned.
Maybe could it be Punk Cena at Survivor Series?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they did throw that out there. That would throw out a lot of things because I'm imagining Punk is in War Games, just the way they are setting things up. So
like Dom versus Rey to me feels a bit bigger than just an edition of Raw. But MSG is a big show, so you know that.
Like obviously, that to do it in San Diego would be cool, but if this is Cena's opponent, that's a lot bigger for Dominic in San Diego.
So. Yeah, it's true.
You could do this at the Garden, though, and just do an angle, and Cena comes to Rey's aid, and that sets things up. This could just be a bridge to get there.
The matches we're kind of playing around with is Rey and Dom, and Cena and Punk. And the shows that we could see either of those, you know, like that we're going to maybe, you know, fill with these matches is MSG and Survivor Series, right? And I think you can kind of mix and match, and I'm sure you'll still come up with something satisfying. Of course, the X factor is like whether or not Punk or Cena are involved in War Games itself, right?
I think Punk would definitely be in War Games.
Okay, so that would wipe out the Cena-Punk match being at Survivor Series.
That would be my guess. But they could also, like, you know, they can always blow stuff up.
Yeah, I really like the segment. Like, these two have fantastic chemistry together as opponents, but like in ring and also especially on the microphone. I've never been so entertained by like a father yelling at his son and vice versa. I love the Eddie like don't disrespect my dad line. I think they could have been a lot more blatant about explaining that like on commentary and stuff, but they didn't even touch it. Like 90% of this audience understood exactly what Dominic meant, and I just thought it made the line so great.
And it was a line that would elicit a babyface response because it was just such a great, well-timed line. And he was so quick to then say, "And I was better than Eddie ever was." So it didn't even give a chance for the crowd to like cheer Dominic over Rey because of that line. It was really structured well. So I see this match happening. This feels too big for them to put on like a AAA show.
Yeah, no way.
But I could totally see them doing at least an angle with these two at the Garden to set up Cena, if that's the case. And you have, you know, Cena with Rey in his corner in San Diego. You could have something like that, or yeah, some involvement of Rey on the San Diego show. Lyra meets with Bayley. These two have never had a conversation where Lyra does not look like she's about to have a heart attack. And she just wants to talk. We haven't had a chance to talk. Let's talk. And it's like, just chill out. And Lyra's like, okay. Oh.
Lyra's about to Hulk out.
Oh, man. She makes
nervous. Which they've completely dropped, by the way. The whole Jekyll and Hyde thing, like, was not at all a factor on the show in this backstage segment or even the match. She's just...
No, they're now kind of just... They're just a team now.
And Bayley is just Bayley. Like, she's just normal.
I'm not complaining. I think these two, they add something to this tag division. They have pretty good matches.
Yeah.
I don't need the dual personality bit. I'm fine if we just quietly move past that.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Becky shows up. She stands on top of the desk and... maybe she's getting like the crazy gimmick now, because she was like on edge here, how the vision ruined everything. My hot husband is hurt at home. I'm dealing with a crooked referee. And then I was sent home to cool down. And she insults New Mexico, a place that is only known for a TV show about them smoking meth. More to come when we chat about the David Silver addiction over a 3-week arc in season 4. Mm. She runs down Maxine, says she does not belong here. I am a student of the game, and you can go train with the best. It's not going to make a difference. And then what was interesting here is she walks to the back, and she walks into the Kabuki Warriors, who are making their entrance, and has a stare down with Asuka before walking to the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Becky continues to be... Well, first of all, that's a big tease for, you know, future Becky Asuka match, maybe even a team up. Like, this could be War Games.
You know, I was gonna say, like, we have to create the women's War Games match, and this would get Becky and the Kabuki Warriors on the same page. That was kind of where I was thinking here.
Yeah, but Becky, I think, is like, despite her having a great segment with Paul Heyman that kind of like ties up her loose end with the vision, I still think like she's in a really tough position having to like...
She's very lost. She's got this outstanding Maxine match that will happen at some point. And with War Games, that's kind of just throwing everybody together, which is not always the most like focused.
And for somebody who's supposed to be such a, like a, I don't know, like a threat for the women's division, I mean, she's pretty powerless at really getting any sort of revenge on the rest of the division for what they did to her husband. She just kind of has to leave it at that. And instead she's going to a feud with Maxine Dupri. So like, it's such a like steep drop from maybe where she was to where she currently is. But I also think like she's doing a good job of it by like having it all get to her. Like, she's doing this sort of like hysterically rambling character, I think, really well. And the promo style is like very effective to me, and it's different from what she's done in the past. So I continue to find her very entertaining.
Could you see AJ Lee brought back if they're doing War Games?
And totally.
That would very much help Becky, I think, get back. Like, you have this Maxine match. That's a TV program. But AJ's the big match that's sort of just has been left out there after WrestlePalooza.
It's a great
This will be a good time to bring AJ back. Like, she's been off since WrestlePalooza.
100%. Like she really is the Brock Lesnar of the women's division, you know? And like, she might mean as much for interest. Anyway, I as a way to like continue to build that rivalry without actually getting to that one-on-one match, I think it's perfect. Yeah.
So Kabuki Warriors continue to the ring to take on Bayley and Lyra Valkyria. And they work on Lyra for a long period, and she fights her way to tag Bayley. Bayley chases after Asuka and gets cut off by Kairi. goes for the Bailey to belly for a two count and then gets stopped attempting the rose plant, sends Sane into the corner with a sunset flip, and then it's Sane that takes over with a double stomp onto Lyra. Bailey makes the save. Asuka pulls Bailey to the floor, stopping a cover, and then Lyra drop kicks Asuka through the ropes. They set up for the insane elbow. Bailey interjects and stops that as Asuka then shoves Lyra into Bailey on the apron as Lyra sends Bailey off, and Lyra comes off the turnbuckle, caught in the Asuka lock, and is forced to tap in 14 minutes and 7 seconds. How did you think Lyra fought the rear naked choke here? Was she defending? Was she going for the hand? What did you think? Was there anything suspicious about this?
We might have to call the FBI and Cash Patel to investigate this one, I think.
Maybe that's a future storyline in WWE. Yeah. Remember when WWE was really pushing to be accepted on all these sports books? I mean, no chance of any improprieties there if we could have pro wrestling matches on all of the DraftKings.
Yeah, on some level, maybe like you could bet on something, like, but I just wouldn't touch it. Myself, I thought it was a really fun tag match. I mean,
I like this tag match. I'm liking Bailey and Lyra together, the Kabuki Warriors. I mean, this run, like, it to me, it has really helped Kairi a lot. Where, you know, for a lot of this comeback, I mean, she was not clicking in a great way, but it seems like she's in her most significant storyline she's had in WWE. Asuka has come back and has shown zero ring rust since returning. She was out for a year and she's performing at this high level and doing more character stuff than ever. So,
it's the character stuff that makes the difference. I mean, not only have they managed to, I think, achieve the standard that we expect them to in ring, but they've taken it to the next step by having great characters and great storylines attached to it as well.
And dare I say, it feels like we have a semblance of a tag team division here for the women.
I was just thinking, I think the Raw women's tag division is probably my favorite tag division in WWE right now, because what else is there for it to compete with? The Raw men's division is barely there. It's AJ, Dragon Lee, Judgment Day. Nobody else really is active or exists at the moment. The SmackDown, like, women's division, that's really non-existent other than, like,
Secret Hervis,
Kiana, James and Julia, whatever. But then you've got the SmackDown men's division.
Go on for 1 minute.
Are we getting a run in here? Okay. Let me talk about the SmackDown men's division. Of course, the wrestling is great. The talent is great. The backstage segments are awful. The storylines are awful. The Wyatts, as much as I think they're maybe a very marketable gimmick and there's great things you could do with them, I find them so uninteresting as champions that are leading that division. So I feel very confident in saying that I think the Raw women's division between the Kabuki Warriors, Lyra and Bailey, who I think are connecting really well, Rhea and Io, if you want to consider those two an actual team, Raquel and Roxy, like, you have a semblance of a great tag division there with a great collection of in-ring performers and also great storylines and great characters to boot. So those are my thoughts, and I think John Pollock, were we interrupted by a potential sleepwalker?
No comment. I can't tell me about this women's tag division.
I've said enough.
I agree with all of your points and then some. Flair and Bliss then run down, chasing off the Kabuki Warriors, and we're going to get the tag title match next Monday in Boston.
Yeah, I think title changes imminent.
It freshens things up. I think we've run our course with Charlotte and Alexa, and I'm ready to see the Kabuki Warriors that you can work a lot more around as your heel champions that are already such an integral part of the show and brings these belts up a level, I think. Mm-hmm. Perez and Raquel met with Balor and JD, and Raquel's got the match with Vicaire next week. Huge win by Raquel tonight and earned this title match in valiant form. Look how proud she is.
She did it.
She finally did. Dom storms in. He's furious that they weren't out there to help him with his father. And Balor says, "We weren't invited. You wanted the spotlight all to yourself. Now they need to go back and win their tag belts, as Dom is the reason they had to defend the belts in the first place," and hands him a shillelagh. Raquel reminds Dominic how they lost the titles, and Perez suggests Dominic go out there to help them tonight, and he reluctantly agrees. Judgment Day. They're at odds.
Yes, they are, yeah. We did get a little bit more between Roxanne and Dominic in this segment because we don't, like, they obviously tease, you know, like Roxanne being very nice to Dom all the time, but we don't really get much interaction with them on a one-on-one basis, and we got a little bit of that here. So we're starting to see that relationship deepen a little bit, which I hope means that Liv Morgan is on her way back, I hope.
AJ Styles and Dragon Lee against Finn Balor and JD McDonagh. They started this match, it was like 10 o'clock, and they went at such a fast pace that I thought someone went long because they were going to get their match in. But in the end, they just ended up extending Raw by like 15 minutes.
Yeah, they could do that on the show. I wonder how Chris Park was.
Oh, that's the first thought. Mr. Punk, please, let's just skip the half of the match.
I'm so sorry.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry, Bruce.
So AJ and Dragon Lee. So Styles hits an Ushigoroshi early, Pescado to the floor, and Dominic comes down with the shillelagh. And Balor goes for the coup de grace, misses. And then after Dominic gets on the apron to distract, Balor misses, hitting JD with the coup de grace. And Styles follows up with a phenomenal forearm. Balor is in for the save and calls for Dominic to go hit AJ with his title belt. The referee catches Dominic, and then Sheamus appears, taking out Dominic. Balor manages to get the shillelagh and hits AJ, and now it's Dragon Lee in to make the save. Lee then hits a Rana and a Topikon Hero to Balor on the floor, leaving AJ alone with JD, and lifts him out of the corner into position for the Styles Clash and pins him in 10 minutes and 32 seconds. I thought that this was not the level of the title change a few weeks ago, but still a very good match that they had all in all.
Yeah, I mean, this was still great enough for me to think it was the match of the show. I thought it was fantastic. I think, I don't love teams that are just kind of put together without much explanation. Like,
AJ and Dragon Lee are kind of put together with no explanation.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, what the hell? Like Dragon Lee is still
a meme.
There's still part of it, the LWO, or he's still part. Is AJ a part of the LWO? Please tell me that's what's happening here, because I would love that.
I'm Latino. Oh, hell.
That would be amazing. Like, make him the Sami Zayn of the LWO and just...
I speak on Glay?
He'd be the perfect, like... That, like, just give me vignettes of him, like, just, like, you know, I don't know, going to, like, like, just trying, like, all sorts of Spanish food and just... Or, sorry, Mexican food. It writes itself.
But those can be some vignettes. Dragon Lee takes AJ home to meet the family.
Yeah, meet my abuela. Let's meet AJ's abuela, okay?
Do you have any ketchup?
What? But, like, you know, Brodito, you can argue, is also one of those types of teams. And look how great that is turning out. And I see AJ and Dragon Lee turning into the same direction because they are building, even if they don't seem perfect together on the surface, they are going to, like, they're forcing them to be perfect together because of how great they are in ring. And this match, I thought, was fantastic. I think, you know, they have great chemistry with Balor and JD, and it was very well exemplified in this match.
Vicar's leaving. You could tell that this loss was really weighing on Stephanie Vaquer. Like, she has not thought about this match since the second it ended. Nikki runs out, apologizing profusely, and says how disappointed in herself she is. And I'm so sorry. You now have to defend your title against Raquel, even though I don't know how that happens. But so what? She says, you know, I thought I could come back and hang with all of you, but I'm too rusty. I'm making bad decisions. Vaquer tells Nikki, no, you are amazing. You're one of the women who paved the way. And Nikki says, thanks, I really needed to hear that. Not one positive comment about any of my work since coming back. Everything about how old I am. So thank you very much, Stephanie. I really needed to hear that. This turn is coming from 5 miles from Sunday. Yeah. But hey, this Certainly. Is a... The turn is necessary for Nikki at this point.
Oh, I think it's been really well done. I mean, in wrestling, you kind of have to make these things somewhat obvious, right? And I like in the end, you just want these sort of interactions to build to a big reaction for that eventual turn. Even if people see it coming, I think it'll feel emotionally more weighted, you know, because of these sort of moments. I mean, it's it was somewhat unexpected in having Nikki not necessarily blame Vakir for the loss, which she could very well could have done. Instead, she's blaming herself. And I thought here, this was notable because Vakir gave us, I think, one of her bigger, you know, English speaking performances, you can say. You know, she didn't just come out here to give a speech. She had to give a pep talk to Nikki Bella to give her some motivation, all right? Some Monday motivation about how great of a person she
maybe
is.
Maybe AJ gave her a pep talk. Maybe he gave her some notes beforehand.
Maybe, yeah. But I thought Vakir...
A tutor.
Maybe. But Vakir did really well here in this speaking role, and I'm very curious to see how this story turns out. I think they're doing it. I'm enjoying it.
When Nikki turns,
yeah,
I want her to be the heel character on the podcast with Brie. I think that would be really entertaining.
What do you mean? How is she the heel on the podcast?
Like, play the character on the podcast, too. Like, really commit to the bit.
Yeah, I think so. She should.
November on the Post Wrestling Cafe will include Rewind Away, looking at some of the biggest retirement matches in pro wrestling history, with selections from All Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and Stardom, among others. Plus, we'll have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322 from Madison Square Garden, and the Tanahashi Final Homecoming. John and Wei will be taking all of your questions on this month's installment of Ask Away, and John gets together with Brandon from New Jersey for a Season 4 retrospective of 90210. All that and so much more. Join now at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door. We got our second version of the WrestleMania 42 trailer. We're going to get from everyone's perspective over the next 6 months, Way. I can't wait. So we heard from Roman Reigns here.
I skipped this. Was it? I thought it was the same one. This was different?
No, it was. You got to hear Roman Reigns talk. Okay. So we'll get all of them. Each month, a new person will talk here. Who's Paul Levesque's opponent for Mania?
Our wallets.
He is the centerpiece here.
He's the dealer.
I control all of this.
Yeah, he's the dealer. He controls the chips. Look at why is Heyman looking at Paul Levesque like that? You know, is he the true? What is it?
Like, what is Paul Levesque's in-story role here? Like, what is he as I'm looking at this poster?
Well, he's the dealer. He's the boss. He's the god.
I'm saying, like, if I'm just watching the show, like, what is the role he holds in this world?
Well,
acknowledging that this is the man that crafts all the storylines?
Yeah.
Like that's his position? Okay. Heyman walks into Jay's locker room. He always loved Jay because he always kept him guessing and can't understand why he's teaming with Punk, the man who prevented him from becoming champion. And Jay explains, Punk faced me one-on-one, no tricks, and I respect that. Heyman brings up how Roman would never have said something like that. Jay doesn't care. He says that he only is listening to himself from now on. And Heyman explains how the Bronze have waited, but now the leashes are off. It's all out war. And if you don't join the vision, you will be beaten down at the door. And Jay, you've got a vision of your own. And I like that.
What does he mean by that? Ominous.
I don't know, but this will add more depth to this very complex Jey Uso character.
So is Heyman suggesting that, like, Jay is up to no good and he recognizes that, or is he just like trying to make like is he threatening Jay in a way that also says, I know you know better?
I'd take it as the latter.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. That's interesting.
Saxton interviewed Flair and Bliss. I did not pull any audio from this.
This was during Netflix too,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. This was another commercial break. They announced they will face the Kabuki Warriors next week in Boston. They never back down from a challenge. And then in the most painful dialogue of this entire show, they both say, we're like the same person. We're on the same. And Charlotte says Paige and Bliss says Wave over top of each other. Then they repeat and each says the other word over top of each other. Just dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. Next week in Boston, they defend the tag titles. John Cena will appear. Vicaire takes on number one contender Raquel Rodriguez, fresh off of watching the pinfall. And then in the first two tournament matches to determine who faces Cena, it is Rusev against Damian Priest and Shinsuke Nakamura against Sheamus. Loser goes to the Tokyo Dome.
Maybe. We'll see. Are you suggesting Damian Priest be Hiroshi Tanahashi's final
opponent? I think Tanahashi rolls into the dome with a tank.
The tank, sure. I feel like Rusev will beat Priest, and I'm feeling Nakamura beating Sheamus, just because we've already seen Rusev and Sheamus already.
Yeah, we don't know what the bracket setup are, so we don't even know if this will result in these two winners facing. It's true. Just these are the first two matches. So, Yeah, I mean, none of these four are facing John Cena. So, I mean, it's just whatever. Whoever wins these matches.
They're going to use this to build to their next storylines for each person.
Or for Nakamura, he's got no storylines coming up.
Well, yeah.
Unless he meets with Ghetto in a dark alley somewhere. Punk
he's teaming with Ray Phoenix to oppose the MFTs. That's a major storyline, okay?
He'll be in Phoenix's corner this Friday, I'm sure. Yeah. Punk and Jey Uso against Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. They explain that Logan Paul is in a local medical facility.
Okay.
Old terminology dies slowly. Punk and Jey clear the ring, and the two men yeet toward the crowd. And then the Vision take over with a piggyback splash onto Punk, and they beat this man down for about 50 minutes. And they cut off the ring. Reed knocks Jey off the apron. They hit a flapjack into a lung blower, and then finally Punk tags Jey.
This was the Shatter Machine, wasn't it?
It kind of was the Shatter Machine. You're right, there was a hip attack onto Reed, and then he avoided the jagged edge, spears Reed, but then Braun dives in. Punk hits a flying clothesline, and then the four go to the floor, and they're fighting, and they're fighting, and they're fighting, and they're fighting, and the bell rings at 10 minutes and 15 seconds. I did not have quite the forgiveness that I did the recent Moxley-Kyle O'Reilly series, which to me was a compelling countout finish. This was not. This was pretty... nothing. And the crowd was like, we paid these top dollars for these 7,000 seats, and that's what we got at the end.
Agreed.
You know, there was some stuff here. I like some of the double team stuff with Breaker and Reed, but overall I thought this was a pretty slow plodding main event here.
Well, I certainly found the finish pretty unsatisfying, and I continue to find it so interesting that, like, it's multiple weeks now where, like, Moxley versus Kyle O'Reilly, that feud has given us, like, what on paper would look like terrible finishes, you know, Moxley getting himself DQ'd with the referee, getting to a double countout. Yet when I'm watching that feud, I come out of it so much more satisfied than examples like this that are just clear cop-outs. That feud, Moxley and Kyle O'Reilly,
it's actually escalating with the finishes, like, and it's actually helped Kyle O'Reilly in a way, whereas this was, you're right, way, let's get the stars on the main event and we're not going to beat anybody.
Yeah, so I think it continues to, like, show me how great and inventive this Moxley Kyle O'Reilly feud is that's currently going on in AEW, because the standard is this. The standard is, like, just we're going to put stars on the main event, then we're just going to, like, get out of it because we don't want anybody to take the pin. So that was very unsatisfying. Yeah.
But what they got at the end was an angle. Punk and Jey fight Reed over to the desk. Breaker comes in with a running spear to Jey, then hits another spear in the ring, and then a tsunami until Punk chases them off with the chair. Braun and Reed get their own chairs and come in when Logan Paul, emerging from a local medical facility, appears next to CM Punk, and he's brought brass knuckles with him. And you know where this one's going. He winds up, and then he turns, and he blast CM Punk, who goes down, and Heyman is stunned. He can't believe this. And then Logan Paul, as the crowd chants, "Fuck you, Logan," smiles at Paul, hands him the brass knuckles. And you come away at the end of this that this was not a plan, but this was a understanding that they reached by the end of this, putting Logan Paul alongside the Vision, likely for War Games, would be my thought here. But I don't know. I didn't like it as much just from the opening angle to where we got here, but this is certainly much better than teasing Logan Paul in any kind of babyface light. So
So did you take this as a permanent addition to the vision from Logan Paul?
I see it. I mean, I didn't quite take it like that, but I certainly feel like for War Games, we know the Vision are going to be on one side and they need people. So Logan Paul is at least he's a body. And yeah, whether they see a need to continue with Logan Paul, I mean, they have now made this this affiliation with him. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really like that, especially like in light of, you know, obviously Seth Rollins not being around, having Logan Paul provide the star power as an actual hateable heel.
He's also another guy that can do a promo that Breaker and Bronson cannot. And if you don't want to always like, he can fill that part of Rollins' absence, at least as a talker.
Yeah, very much so. So I happen to like it. It increases the star power for War Games. And, you know, will continue to help us tease Punk versus Paul, which seems to be a destination. Like, you remember that initial report from Meltzer about, like, the rumored Survivor Series match? Remember how, Austin Theory was on that list? Was Logan Paul ever on that list?
I don't think he was.
Obviously, all plans have probably gone out the window because of Seth Rollins. But, like...
Rollins.
I certainly can't see Austin Theory being inserted now, especially because like he plays such a similar character to Logan Paul, and I couldn't have seen Austin Theory really fit in at all. When Logan Paul, I think, just does a much better job at playing that character. Plus, he's so much more famous.
But I would expect Rock. I think he makes a lot of sense for War Games. Yeah. And then, I mean, presuming it'll be 5-on-5, then finding another heel, whoever that would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 5-on-5. And then on the babyface side of things, what are you thinking?
Well, Punk and Jay seem like givens. LA Knight is certainly in that mix.
SmackDown? Anybody on SmackDown? Not that you have to have SmackDown people, but...
No, but you could. I mean, I guess the big question is, like, if you're putting all your big stars in here, is it more valuable to do a third Cody Drew match, or would you attach them and make this like your big kind of all-star type of deal? Cause I'm trying to think of like who are your big baby faces and heels. And like, I don't know who you round out. Oh, well, like Jimmy could be on the baby face side. That would, that would make sense too.
Jimmy. And if Jimmy, maybe you'll get Sami Zayn, provided he's healthy or whatever the case is.
Yeah, like he's in that mix too. So
Roman, of course, how could we forget?
Oh, we're totally over. Yeah, they're good. You could keep Cody and Drew away from this if you need to get to a third match between them. Right. So that's probably where we are, you know, loosely shaping things up towards War Games, which they still have a lot of time until that show.
But next week, Boston, the week after that,
Madison Square Garden. So there's some big Raws coming up over the next couple of weeks. And then, it's Survivor Series, and then it's the Cena show. So the next month, they have a lot of fairly big episodes of both TV and the big shows.
Cena on both of those Raws coming up. They mentioned all this will be announcing the first round matches on SmackDown for the Cena tournament. So, those are the things coming up.
Enjoyable Raw?
I thought so. Like, I thought the wrestling was of a pretty high standard. I thought, like, the storytelling and the promos were all pretty good throughout the show. I personally, you know, quite enjoyed the Logan Paul storyline that they were telling throughout the night.
Yes, I thought that AJ and Dragon Lee, like, I wish they could kind of flesh out this tag division a bit more, because they really do add something, like, if you're getting a match from them, like, every other week. Mm-hmm. Of that level, like it really does add something on Raw as well, and Roxanne Perez can continue on this win streak and get title shots for her friends.
I really want to see some segments with AJ hanging out with the LWO. That's all I want.
Well, we are going to transition over to forum.postwrestling.com for all the members on the Post Wrestling Cafe. But Wei and I will be here all week long, so don't be strangers. The Poison Rana crew will be back on Tuesday evening to chat about NXT. And then Wednesday, we've got the return of Pollock and Thurston, and then Dynamite on Wednesday evening. We'll go over the lineups for both of those shows on the cafe. So goodbye to YouTube, and hello, forum.postwrestling.com. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.